coming off that song, it makes me think of, as Mike referred to, Genesis 23 and the loss of Abraham's wife. Sarah has died. He's grieving the loss of his wife, finds a burial ground with a community in a land that he did not know. He was called to a place that he did not know, that he was not familiar with. This group of people welcomes him. They have a negotiation. He grieves and laments over the loss of his life. And then we move into chapter 24. And I think about loss these days. I think about even aspects of my own loss over the last so many years. And I think, you know, I feel so desperate these days for God's Spirit to comfort me and to comfort my neighbors and to comfort my friends and this community. Crying out in the mornings or at night, the psalmist says, at night your heart instructs me. That God instructs us even in the night. And for some of us, we've lost some things. We've lost loved ones. We've lost friends. We've lost proximity with friends. We've lost perhaps finance. You fill in the blank. But some of us have lost elements of life that feel unrecoverable at times. And I think the story of Abraham is linked, of course, to a larger story. The story of God's pursuit of humanity throughout the world. God knows the pain of our loss. God knows what we're facing and what we're challenged with and what's on our hearts. And so Sarah is buried, and Abraham begins to turn toward God's grounding, God's holding, God's guiding. And so the essence of this message, if I were to pare it down to like sort of one sentence, it would just be really simple. I'm actually a fairly simple guy, so forgive me if it's like, Nate, I could totally, I could have preached that. Well, that's kind of the point, is that something would be repeatable, transferable, right, across generations. That's my hope and prayer. So if you can go out and preach it and share it, that's the goal. So it's simply this: God's life of promise and covenant that we read about in this story of Abraham, God's life is fulfilled and sustained as we rely upon God and each other. As we rely upon God and each other and the other. So the essence of the message today is simply to rely upon God and each other. We need each other. And some of us have experienced so much pain, we can't even put it into words. And the Spirit groans on our behalf, as the scriptures say. You know, I think of Amanda Berry Smith. She's quoted in Karen Wright Marsh's book, Vintage Saints and Sinners. And she says, "Then I saw what was the matter. Fear." Fear. Now, why would she say that? Amanda Berry Smith was born into slavery. She was born into an extreme situation of poverty. She had lived a challenging life throughout, in her short life, of even up to her early 30s. She'd been married twice and lost both of her husbands. And she had lost four of her five children by the time she was in her early 30s. And she recalls a moment when she cried out to God and the Spirit of God met her in her pain. And when God met her in her pain, she describes the experience of the Spirit coming over her and within her that she could hardly explain. And she says, "Then I saw what was the matter. It was fear." And I'm challenged by the question, what would you do if you weren't afraid? What would you do if you weren't afraid? Where would you go? What would you do with your life? I'm struck by that question because this story is a story of faith. And faith sometimes has an odd relationship with fear. Faith sometimes, as fear, comes in the sense of reverence for God. To know that God is holy and we are not, and that somehow we can acknowledge that there is this God of the heavens, the living God that is beyond us, and we say, God, you are holy and we are not. We need you. We fear you. We reverend you. We give you reverence. We honor you. And we need more of that in our world today, I think. That God, you are beyond me and I am desperate for you. And there's also this sense of faith in spite of fear, because faith is a very real human emotion. It's just normal to feel a sense of fear, whatever that fear may be, fear of what others think, fear of getting it wrong, fear of making a mistake, fear of making the decision when I thought I had it right, and then all of those nuances, we could fill in lots of different kinds of fears. But that is the human experience. It's normal. It's real. We acknowledge our fear in the room. What's going to happen next in my life, in your life, in our society? Sometimes we've even commodified fear and made it into an economy. There's an economy of fear. We make money off of fear. And Abraham turns into chapter 24 with a resilient hope that God will sustain the promise that God made to Abraham and his family. To rely upon God and each other is the way it's all sustained. So we pick up in chapter 24, verse 1. Abraham was now very old, okay, 130 years old, if I'm remembering correctly here. And the Lord had blessed him in every way. He said to his senior servant in his household, the one in charge of all that he had. By the way, the senior servant would have been the high steward, the primary steward over all of Abraham's blessings and possessions. And he calls out this man, and they make an oath. And the oath is representative. It's symbolic to say, my seed will carry on into the next generation and the next generation and the generations after that. So they make a promise, an oath, and he sends out this high servant to say, I need you to go find a wife for my son, Isaac. Abraham had experienced loss. He acknowledges that loss. He grieves and laments that loss. And in the middle of his loss, he begins to turn ever so slightly. Not that that loss isn't still felt. Not that that loss has gone somehow magically away. But he begins to turn toward the grounding guidance of the Spirit of God. However, the mystery of God's triune presence happened within his family context, and he begins to take just one step forward to send his servant out to find a wife for Isaac. Y'all, this is a love story, all right? We're about to get into the love story, but it's a love story within a love story. It's a love story within the love story of God's pursuit of humanity that will carry on beyond Isaac and Rebekah, even to the point where the reason we are in this room and online right now is because of elements of this story that we're reading about. It gets me all fired up. So he sends this guy out. Why did he do that? This was a common practice in this day and age, to arrange marriages, right? So he sends out the high servant. The servant says, well, what happens if she says no? What if she's unwilling? And he says, well, then the deal's off. Then the oath, don't worry about it. But I send you out. And there was a level of trust, of empowerment, of faith, in spite of perhaps elements of fear. And he sends the servant out with high, high trust. And it says in verse 6, make sure that you do not take my son there, Abraham said. In other words, back to the current land where they were among the Canaanites. He says, instead, go back to my homeland. He says specifically in verse 7, the Lord, the God of heaven, who brought me out of my father's household and my native land, and who spoke to me and promised me on oath, saying, to your offspring I will give this land. He will send his angel before you so that you can get a wife for my son from there. Now, this might sound odd that he's saying, don't go over here. I want you to go back to my family and in my tribe, so to speak. Now, one of the misinterpretations of a text like this is that, well, see, God said, you know, interracial marriage, that's like ridiculous, okay? What's happening here, what we need to point out, is that God has promised Abraham and his family a covenant, a promise of life, a nation for all nations, a family made up of all families, open to every nation, ethnicity, and culture from there into our present history. But it took a carving out, a setting apart of a certain kind of family where Abraham says, this is what God told me to do, therefore I will do it. Check out chapter 18, verse 19. We'll see it on the screen here. For I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord. How? How do we keep the way of the Lord? This is what it says in the Torah. Genesis is the first book of the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. How do we keep to do what is right and just so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him? In other words, to do what is right and just is linked once again to righteousness and justice. The foundation of Abraham's family is actually linked with righteousness and justice, to do what is right and just. This is the way of the Lord that Abraham was committed to with everything he had, to the point where he's willing to put it all on the line. He's willing to go in faith. He's willing to go to a place where he did not know. He's even willing to send someone out on his behalf, on behalf of his family, to continue the promise of God that God told him would happen. This is unbelievable. That this is the foundation. This is the foundation of the way of the Lord as described. The father of our faith, a friend of God, is how Abraham is described. To keep the way of the Lord is to do what is right and just. We need a little more righteousness and a little more justice in our world today, do we not? We need the way of the Lord to reshape us, to reorient who we are, to shape all of our life around God's ways, God's kingdom, God's love, to rely upon God and each other as if our life depended on it. Because the life of Abraham's family, the life and the promise that was instilled to him and his family, it was dependent upon someone else living out the call. And so we see that. In other words, we are dependent upon our interdependence. We are dependent upon our we desperately need God, and we desperately need each other. Otherwise, we have nothing else to rely on. Someone asked me recently, well, what about the pain? What about the angst that we all feel? And I thought, there's no other way. It's been said that we are wounded in community and we are healed in community. We need each other. There is no other way around it. My own sense of healing and transformation has happened because of you. It's because you welcomed me and my family into this space. There's no other way than to receive each other and help one another. We rely upon God and each other to live out the way of God in the world. There's just no other way. And I thank God for that. So these days I'm using terms like co-follower of Jesus, because we serve a communal God, a triune God, an interconnected God. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, we need God and each other. I'm a co-follower of Jesus, a co-learner, a co-listener. We need each other. So he sends the servant out. And it says that the servant went and he stations himself, which was common, near the well, where he would meet women who were coming in the evening to draw out water at the well, which was just a common practice in that day. And he begins to pray. And we see that to rely upon God and each other, there is a sense of prayer that our lives would be a living prayer. Abraham was a man of faith. His servant strikes me as a man of faith who actually prayed for God's guidance. He says in verse 12, then he prayed, Lord God of my master Abraham, make me successful today and show kindness to my master Abraham. What a prayer. How do we define success today? I think in our American context, God's calling us to lay our idols down, whatever they may be. To lay our idols down, to name our idols without fear, to say, God, I've got some idols in my life. God, we have some idols in our life. God, we have some idols out there. We need to lay them down. How does he define success? He defines success by saying, show your kindness to Abraham. This is incredible to me that Abraham is praying a prayer for quote-unquote success, but the success isn't to accumulate more things. The success that he's praying for isn't to try to accomplish something. The prayer of success is for someone else around him to flourish. Maybe, what if our prayer for success was, God, would you help us to fulfill your mission in the world? Wherever you call us into the world, wherever locally or globally, you are calling us to live out your way of justice and righteousness, that we would pray for others around us to flourish, that if you're flourishing, then I actually have found an element of success. What if American Jesus followers redefined success that way? That my destiny is caught up in yours and your destiny is caught up in mine. That if you're hurting, then I'm hurting. And if you're celebrating, then I'm celebrating. And if you're carrying something, then I'm carrying it along with you and vice versa. Because we need each other. Because to fulfill the life of God is to rely upon God and each other and the other. To pray a different kind of prayer for success, that you would flourish, that I would get out of the way, that Jesus would increase and that I would decrease, that would be the heart and the foundation and the thread of our prayer, no matter where we are, what we're up to in the world. I love this prayer by the high servant, the high steward, and he begins to pray and he's pouring himself out, and I love this in verse 15. Before he had finished praying, Rebekah came out with a jar on her shoulder, and she was the daughter. Oh my goodness, wait. Before he had finished praying? He had prayed like, okay, if a woman comes out and she has a jar and she offers me a drink and then she offers to feed my 10 camels, do you know how much water it would take to give water to 10 camels? Do we know how much water camels drink? This is his specific prayer. Sometimes we get so caught up in all the talking and all the scenarios. Well, if this, God, then that. And God's like, yeah, you can pray all like that, all you want. And while you're doing your prayer, oh high servant, I'm just going to go ahead and move on your behalf. Sometimes we get into negotiations with God. Well, if you could do this, then. And sometimes God may mysteriously somehow honor that with an act of grace. But this is not a prescriptive prayer. It's a descriptive way of the way this guy in particular was saying, God, I need your help. I'm desperate to rely upon you and others, even to the point where I'm desperately relying on someone I haven't even met yet. And I need you to move on my behalf. And while he's laying out all of his particulars, God goes ahead and just, Rebekah comes onto the scene. Isn't it like God to go ahead and move on our behalf even when we don't have it all figured out? What would we do if we weren't afraid? What would we do if we weren't afraid? We could pray, talk, and God's like, yep, I hear you. I'm going to go ahead and bring her onto the scene. And so here she is. She enters the story, and they have this exchange, and she offers to give him a drink of water, and she offers to give him enough water for 10 camels. The thing that she would have been carrying would have held about 3 or 4 gallons of water. And to go down into the crevice where it's not like the well we would picture in, somehow drawing up a a bucket with water. That was something that she had to climb down in with multiple women. So this is estimated to have been about 50 trips back and forth to give enough water for 10 camels. This person, Rebecca, is a resilient woman, an amazing woman. And he's struck by who she is, her character, and who she is. And so he begins to offer right away this arrangement. And he gives her jewelry, which was common. And it was enough jewelry that could have basically fed her family for 100 years. It was the kind of jewelry that said, I mean business. I think you're the one for my master's son who I'm looking for a wife for. And what does she do? She offers hospitality. So we see this thread of how do we rely on God and each other? We see it through, we first offer ourselves in faith, and we rely upon others even to the point where we don't know exactly what that person will do on our behalf because we're all interconnected. And the person who goes out on our behalf is praying and asking God for specific guidance. And the person that he hasn't met yet, who he runs into, her name is Rebecca, and she says, hey, I'd like to offer you hospitality. And there's a reliance upon God and each other in that sense. And so she offers this incredible hospitality. It says in verse 24, she answered him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Machilah, born to Noor. I'm probably not saying that correctly, but forgive me, I'll laugh at myself later. I do that all the time. I'm thinking of a quote I gave months ago. Willie Wiesel. Anyways, I'm like, that's an inside. I was like, no, it's Nate, what were you doing? Like, I'm okay, that was a total, I don't even know what that just was. We're going to keep going, all right? We're going to keep going. So here we go. All right. We have plenty of straw and fodder as well as room for you to spend the night. Her family offers this incredible amount of hospitality. Come on over. Come on over. My home is your home. This is common in the Near East. I've been there and it's been incredible. Some of the most hospitable people I've ever met in the world live in North Africa and in the Middle East. And we see this experience expressed through her family. And what is his first response in verse 26? Then the man bowed down and worshiped the Lord. To rely upon God and each other is just it's a lifestyle of worship. It's a lifestyle that says, I need the Lord more than ever to keep the way of the Lord in my life, in my family, in my society. And I need my neighbor and each other more than ever. We are desperate for God and each other to live out this way and this call in the world. And so we see this expression of an immense amount of radical hospitality, if you will. And so the story goes on, and the brother comes out and kind of negotiates on behalf of the father, which if the father wasn't in significant physical condition, sometimes the older brother would come out and play the role of the father in the sense of negotiating and negotiating even the marriage itself on behalf of the family. And so they have these exchanges, and they said, okay, yes. And then his first response is worship. Then they spend the night. He gets up in the morning. I'm ready to go back. And they said, actually, if you could just wait a little bit longer. And he says, no, please let me go and fulfill what God has called me to do, what Abraham has charged me to do. I need to get back home. And so they say, well, check this out in verse 57. Then they said, well, let's call the young woman and ask her about it. So they called Rebecca and asked her, will you go with this man? And she says, I will go. There is a sense of empowerment, identity, fulfillment. She knows who she is. She knows where she's going and what she's about, even though she didn't know where she was going. Here we see Rebecca demonstrating, I believe, the same amount of faith that Abraham had expressed in his own life. Here we see the Spirit of God linking a family together, a call, a promise that is held up by relying upon God and each other. She says, I will go. And I believe those words for a woman in her context would have been extraordinary. She says for herself, I will go. She's not relying upon men to make the decision for her. She knows who she is and where she's going. And on behalf of women everywhere, linked with Sarah's life who had been lost, she recognizes she is now the one to carry it forward. She says, I will go. What would you do if you weren't afraid? Where would you go if you weren't afraid? What would God call within us if we weren't afraid? The simple words, I will go, could mean I'm willing to remain, could mean I'm willing to stay, and they could mean I am being called to go. Somehow in the midst of God's mysterious movement in the life and family of God among all nations, those who claim to follow Jesus, there's been a combination, a thread, a blend of giving and receiving, of sending and going, of receiving and sending. And somehow that story continues on. It might take different forms in different places, but we are called to receive, to open the doors, to open our lives, to extend hospitality, not just in our physical homes, but in our presence, in our listening, in offering hospitality out of who we are with one another, even among strangers that we cross paths with. To extend hospitality is to live a life, the kind of spirit that's led by the Holy Spirit, no matter where we are among those who are hurting and suffering in the world or celebrating in the world. And at the same time, we send out. So we receive in community and we send in community. I've often said I only try to go where I'm invited or where there is community confirmation. Has the triune God confirmed this? Has the community around me confirmed this? Has the community where I'm going, have they? So it's like a dance. And the mystery of God moves in the middle of that dance to send and receive people. This is common throughout the story of God in history. And so we see this happening. She says, I will go. And they make their way. And toward the end of this chapter, by the way, Genesis 24 is the longest chapter in Genesis. So thank you for hanging with me through this story. This love story within the love story. That Rebecca joins in, they send her off as a family. And it says later toward the end of this chapter, in verse 64 and 65, it says, Isaac went out to the field to meditate. This word here indicates that he was praying as well. Here we see the thread again of prayer and worship, relying upon relationships, even those that we've never met. And here again, Isaac is praying out in a field, and the camels begin to come from a distance. And Rebecca sees him from a distance, and she says, who is that man? Actually, I think it was probably more like, who is that man? Who is that man, right? I was talking with, I'm going to put Laura and Ken Strahl on the spot, but I was talking recently, and I said, you know, Ken Strahl, that guy is a stud. And Laura's response was, I know, absolutely. I was like, that's right. Who is that man? So, and sort of the rest is history, right? But where is the servant? Where is the high steward? Where did he go in the story? He says, well, that's my master. And in other words, he's saying, this is what this whole thing was about. And it reminds me of a poem, an ancient Chinese poem, a proverb, actually, that says something like this. Go to the people. Live among them. Learn from them. Love them. Start with what they know. Build on what they have. But the best of leaders, when their task is done, the people will remark, "We have done it ourselves. We have done it ourselves." And I see an element of leadership among this high servant who is called and charged to go fulfill a certain kind of mission. And to fulfill that, he prays for the success of the family that he is serving alongside and stewarding as this incredible leader who is like not just making a match here, but then he sort of fades out of the story as this promise of Abraham continues with Isaac and Rebekah. And it says she comforted him. Isn't it like God to connect us with new kinds of friends and relationships to comfort us in our pain when we have experienced significant loss in our life? Isaac had lost his mother. And Rebekah is now linked with him, and we are here because of this story. And so the servant essentially works himself out of a job. I'm struck by that. What would we do if we weren't afraid? That's the communal question. Because we serve a communal God. Now, when we go to the people and we live among, whatever the context of that may be, depending on the context, I'm also struck by this old Aboriginal quote, and I'll paraphrase here, but it says something like, if you've come here to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come here because your liberation is wrapped up in mine, then let us work together. We have to rely upon God and each other to live out this way of the Lord as described in Genesis chapter 18. And so in closing, I'm reminded of Hebrews, even Hebrews chapter 11, this amazing chapter of faith, that faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not yet seen. We can trust God even when we don't understand fully where the whole thing is headed. And so we see these elements throughout the text of invitation, confirmation, attentiveness, a commitment to righteousness and justice, a commitment to worship, a commitment to prayer, to seek the Spirit's guiding in our lives. And then we see the link. If I had a rope right now, it's like the link between the Gospels and this story. It's like Jesus is pulling a rope from history into the moment. And we come upon this scene where Jesus is at the well with a Samaritan woman. Mike and I were talking about this story recently, and he was sharing some insights with me, and we were just had this amazing exchange around this idea that Jesus is sitting at the well, which was common where wives were often found and families were arranging marriages. It's no wonder the disciples came upon the well and said, "Jesus, what are you doing over there? Are you looking for a wife?" That's what maybe perhaps people thought. But then he's also having an exchange with a Samaritan woman, essentially almost equivalent to our day of an interfaith dialogue. And the woman at the well says, "Well, you know, y'all serve God over here on this mountain and we do it this way." And Jesus says, you know, wait, he kind of explains a few things. He said, there will come a day when the true worshipers will worship in spirit and in truth. In other words, it might not be either one. In other words, this family that is being formed is a family for everyone. It's a Jesus way for everyone, available to everyone, every place, every culture, every nation, every ethnicity, across every known and identity. This Jesus way isn't limited by religious people who try to keep others in a box. God is much, much larger than that. And Jesus calls people to himself that I am the way, he says. I am the truth. Truth is a person. His name is Jesus of Nazareth. And so this family line and story continues through history, and Jesus comes onto the scene and says, my new kind of family, St. Paul called it a new kind of humanity across every line imaginable. This is the heart of God. This story is available to everyone who's willing to trust, to live, to obey, to receive the life of salvation, liberation, and transformation that comes through Jesus Christ. And so my closing thought is just, God is calling us to rely upon each other, to rely upon God and each other, step by step, by faith, as if our lives depend on it, because they do.